you being yourself may not be the most popular person.
Yeah.
So are you ready to be yourself amongst all of that confrontation as well?
I know for a fact that people find me annoying. I know it.
I wasn't going to say anything, bro.
I know people do. And I have to live with that almost. Because the cost is that I end up conforming and talking like everybody else, dressing like everybody else, practicing like everybody else, at the risk of not really finding my relationship with God, and which is why I joined the spiritual practice in the first place.
And I think that's what is happening for Arjuna here, also in the Bhagavad Gita. Because he's saying, Krishna's saying, like, at the moment, you've become anxious because you're stepping away from your authenticity.
Yep.
Right? You've become mental because you're not performing your duty, which is to be yourself.
Before we jump into this episode, I'd love to invite you to join this Candid Spiritual community to hear more conversations that will help you become happier, healthier, and more healed. All I want you to do is click on that subscribe button because I love your support. I love seeing all the comments pouring through, all the love pouring through, and we're just getting started. I can't wait to go on this journey with you, whether you're a spiritual seeker or you're just curious about the topic. And we really hope that our conversations will provide you food for thought and inspiration for your own spiritual journey. So join us for honest, candid discussions about spirituality for soul's sake.
Hello and welcome to another episode of For Soul's Sake, a conversation with two of my friends in which we're going to give you honest and candid and spiritual consciousness transforming conversation that's going to help you to hopefully uplift your life today. Joining me, of course, as always, is Nam and Kaylee. Grateful to be with them again. Nice shirt, by the way, mate.
Thank you so much.
I just caught that there's animals on it.
I just saw that as well. I thought it was all flowers, but then sneaky little leopards on there as well.
Yeah, it's a bit fruity and tropical and just...
It matches your personality.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks. I'm really just stepping into myself these days.
From Rastafarianism to to the jungle cats.
You never know what's going to come.
So I've got another verse for you all. It's from the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 2, text number 7. For those that didn't join us on the first episode, Bhagavad Gita, give us a little context. What's this book about?
A therapy session in the middle of a battlefield is how
a
I like
to call
session,
it. Therapy session, yeah?
Life's ultimate therapy session in the most crucial of moments.
Yeah. Translation. Now I am confused about my duty and I've lost all composure because of miserly weakness. This is Arjuna talking to Krishna. He's confused. He's lost all his composure because of miserly weakness. In this condition, I'm asking you to tell me for certain what is best for me. Now I am your disciple and a soul surrendered unto you. Please instruct me.
There's some words in there that I just don't really know. Like,
yeah, old school English, huh?
Like,
tell me.
Okay, what's happening with this miserly weakness? I think being a miser is like holding something back that you should be sharing or giving, right? That's kind of the definition. But what could you give some more context, like what's he holding back or?
I think it's in context of where this verse comes in. So for those people or those listeners who don't know, there's a conversation going on in the middle of a battlefield where Arjun is in the middle of the battlefield and he's looking at his opponents. And all of his opponents are his family, his teachers, his cousins. But due to a particular situation, they're having a battle to figure out who wins and who gains the kingdom. And so he's asked his chariot driver, Krishna, to bring him to the front. And he brings him to the front and essentially, Arjuna is having an episode. He's going through a bit of an anxiety attack. He's just completely losing it, right? Very delusional about what's going on. But what's interesting and where that word like miserly weakness comes in, Arjun's actually renowned for being a very strong soldier, a leader, a warrior, very brave, full of lots of courage, revered by the people in the kingdom. And so something like that is very, very rare to see in him. And therefore,
it's out of character.
Totally out of character.
Yeah.
Totally out of character. But his emotions are being hit because he's kind of coming to the realities of what's about to happen. And for a soldier in those times, they were trained with such rigor and such morale.
Right.
That it was very weak for him to act like this because no one on that side's acting weak.
They're ready to get the job done, right? Mm. And so I think here is where he's just having the final breakdown moment to Krishna, and he's like, I've told you all my troubles and why I'm going through what I'm going. Help me out. I've got no other option.
I mean, that's a big thing in itself, like to admit that you're in a weak spot. I think there's just not enough. I mean, it's coming to the forefront now where people are talking about accepting the issue and then you can get over it, you know, accepting there's a problem. And I know that's very big in AA communities, for example. But I think that nowadays there is what I would call crowded loneliness syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
Crowded loneliness. It's like we're surrounded by hundreds of people all the time. We've got tons of people on our social media accounts. We've got people that, you know, we're always hanging out with, you know, crowded places, etc. But still there's an innate feeling of people feeling I'm quite alone. And because of that, they don't feel like there's enough places to reveal the mind in confidence.
Yeah.
To reveal what's going on in their life with a confidence that someone even cares.
Mm. Yeah, in my experience, not even receiving an answer, but just having someone listen and acknowledge, that can be really powerful.
Yeah, 100%.
I think we can all agree, right? The classic man thing to do is find a solution.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That's just what we do. We're like, oh, okay, here's a problem, here's a solution. But what I love about the Bhagavad Gita is actually, for a lot of it, Krishna's listening.
Mm. The whole first chapter. Don't say a word.
He's just listening. Yeah. And even at the end, after he said what he said, he goes, but that's just my opinion.
Mm.
You know, he's not forcing a solution.
Mm.
And I think that's, especially like in community, maybe that's something that could solve this problem of crowded loneliness.
Yeah.
Is not trying to be a solution mindset person all the time, but actually just being available to listen. You know, that can be really powerful as well.
Definitely. And I think just as you were speaking as well, like with crowded loneliness also comes the fact that we think everyone is doing better than us. When we start a spiritual practice and we enter in a group or whatever it may be, we think everyone else is doing just as good and we're the ones falling behind. Right. And everyone's keeping up that appearance the whole time. Oh, yeah, look at me. I do like Surya Namaskar every morning at 6 a.m. Or, you know, I meditate for 2 hours in the morning at this particular time, right? Yeah. Smashing it out, doing the Pilates and everything. But then, I mean, there's a variety of things you could be doing, right?
Smashing out the Pilates in the morning.
But the fact is, probably no one is.
Yeah.
And they're all having the same trouble you're having.
Yeah.
And because of this keeping up of appearances, you can't actually be honest, or you can't feel like you can feel comfortable enough to be vulnerable with them to really solve the issue at hand.
Mm.
I think it's such a fascinating phenomenon. I think we find it not just in spiritual circles, I think we find it everywhere in life, right? Work or the business world, the entertainment world.
Mm. Yeah, you mentioned it in the last episode. We talked about like going into a hospital and pointing fingers.
Yeah.
And it's so interesting because I recently found out that the word mandir, which is the word for temple, it actually means a place that heals the mind. Mm. Man means the mind and dir means the place where it's steady.
Wow. Mm.
So that's mandir beautiful. Is a place for steadying the mind.
Yeah.
But we actually treat it as just a place to hang out and stuff.
Yeah.
And actually, in spiritual circles, you'll find... I mean, I'm just going to be completely candid and honest. Among bhakti circles, this pretense of trying to be something that we're not is so strong.
Mm.
It's because otherwise we're looked down upon that we're not practicing to the standard. We're looked down upon because, you know, we're not following the ideals. And ultimately, when we're not following those ideals, we feel maybe weak in the ability to share spirituality genuinely.
Mm.
And so, I mean, the answers are obvious, and I'm sure even the secular world will have answers for being able to acknowledge one's issues and acknowledge one's weaknesses.
Yeah.
But I guess the base root of what the Bhagavad Gita is saying, at least find your friend. Find one person where you can reveal your mind and confidence. And for Arjuna, that was Krishna.
Need the confidant.
Need a confidant, yeah.
You know, I don't know if this was your experience. I remember the first bhakti book I ever read was called The Quest for Enlightenment. And it's a book by Prabhupada. It's less well known.
Mm.
But I came across something in that book that I really struggled with.
Is that the one with the skull and like a flower coming out of it?
No, not quite. It's actually, I think it's Lord Brahma sitting on a lotus. I think this is the okay. It's not so well known.
The quest for enlightenment.
Okay, so this is the thing I struggled with. It was called the four regulative principles.
Mm-hmm.
Even the word, like, regulative, I was like, this is sounding like prison or something, right? So, Prabhupada was saying, before you can even consider making spiritual progress, first you have to accept these four things that you can do to regulate your life, right?
Yeah.
Like, you have to give up an unhealthy diet. Ideally, adopt, like, a vegetarian diet, right? Give up intoxication, give up gambling, and give up illicit relations and, like, sexual activity.
Mm.
And I was like, bro, this is, like, me on the daily, right? Yeah, these four things are, like, the four pillars of my life, you know? And I was like, before I can even make 1% of advancement, I have to do these four things.
Yeah.
It felt so lofty and just unattainable for me.
Yeah, unrealistic.
Unrealistic. And actually, the reason I'm saying this is because the thing that changed was just telling that to a friend at the time, right, that was also thinking about spiritual life. Just by saying, being honest and vulnerable and authentic and sincere, like, I just read this thing about these four things I have to do to be a spiritual person. It sounds like really unattainable. Just by sharing that and having them listen and be like, I get you. That really helped me to, like, approach it more. Because it took away the I don't know, like, the mystique or the authority or the oppressive kind of nature of it. Because there's like, oh, maybe there's someone else that can be on this journey with me, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
I think that we all hold the responsibility to, A, open an ear and give people the opportunity to share with us. We all, I think sometimes we put so much pressure on leadership that only the people on the top should be the most compassionate, the most, you know, listen worthy. They should be listening to all the issues that we've got.
Mm.
But rather, I think that there's a piece around recognizing that each and every one of us has almost a responsibility to do that in spiritual circles, regardless of what tradition you come from.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, one of the things that I think people value the most in the Kirtan community is that you can come in as whoever you are from whatever tradition, and we spoke about that last time, but also to be able to compassionately receive someone and to listen to their issues and not worry about just trying to give them the solution. Now, that's powerful. It's like one of the forms of love that I think is most cherishable, actually.
100%. Yeah. One thing I'm really passionate about is this whole thing about destroying the barriers to bhakti.
All right.
Right? Because I think, for me personally, with my journey with bhakti yoga specifically, I've just seen the relevancy of it for anyone and everyone. Yeah. I truly believe that. I truly believe that if certain barriers are overcome or removed, that bhakti can be really a part and integrated into anyone's life. Any person, right? But what I feel we do in spiritual circles, and it's very interesting actually, you see this in yoga communities, in bhakti communities, is that we suddenly build this prowess. As we become a spiritualist, we have this prowess about us. We have this some sort of authority in the ether about us, and the ego is like subtly being fed, but externally we are presenting ourselves as very humble. And so this very inauthentic dynamic comes across, which is totally opposite to our own spiritual lives or the purpose of spiritual life. And so what happens? That happens unconsciously sometimes. So then when someone approaches genuinely, they feel like they need to cross all these cultural barriers, all these kind of the norms about how people sort of talk and speak about spirituality, without, before they can even access the essence of the practice.
Yeah, it's jokes. It's like, I heard this thing from, it was from Keshava Swami. He said, there's a danger of becoming cynical in spiritual circles, that when you join a practice, or you join a group or, you know, community of spiritualists, then at first you see everyone is pure. You're like, oh my God, everyone's like got this mad purity. Everyone's so sincere.
Yeah.
Then some time goes on and you start seeing they ain't pure.
Yeah.
They got a bunch of issues among them. Like, look, they don't even know how to treat women properly. You know, they say they eat only sanctified food, but I saw one at McDonald's the other day. I saw that guy eating
on some chips,
having a McFlurry. I saw it.
McFlurry.
You know, or you know, they say that they're not intoxicating, but I swear I saw a devotee like having a ciggy down the road. You know, you start seeing everyone's faults.
Yeah.
But I'm the pure one. Right. I've got purity. And then what happens later is we become so cynical, we completely feel that no one can be pure, that there's no such thing as purity. We deny purity.
Right.
And that's the danger of communities, spiritual communities, because this podcast is about spiritual communities and spirituality. The danger is that if we don't open a heart, don't open an ear to hear and to be ready to receive and welcome people, that our heart can become hard. And that hard-heartedness breeds cynicism. It breeds this culture of like denying everybody else. Now, you're crap, you're crap, you're crap, you're crap.
I'm just thinking about this this buzzword, authenticity.
Yeah.
And, huge buzzword, right?
It's a big word, right? Yeah. You hear it everywhere. It's like, this is the word of our times. And I feel like in spiritual community, we actually, we can risk, you know, kind of sabotaging our own authenticity by trying to fit in.
Yeah.
And it's funny because we think that a spiritual community is something that is, you know, avant-garde and edgy and, you know, like not the norm, you know. So we think that we're being authentic, but even within that, like at the beginning of this episode, you were like, oh, really nice shirt.
Yeah. Right?
Okay. It's a fruity shirt.
Yeah.
And I would not have had the confidence to wear a shirt like this when I started going into spiritual communities, because I was seeing everyone else was like dressing a certain way. So I was like, okay, I have to fit in, and that's how I will be liked, and that's how I'll be perceived, right? Something as simple as like what you wear, the words you speak.
Yeah.
You know, these things actually, they all go together to make up your identity and your self-confidence and your feeling of self-worth. And it brings me to this point I wanted to share. I heard once that it really resonates with me. A strong community is made of strong individuals. And I really think that if we focus first on, you know, being an authentic, sincere, grounded, enlightened person ourselves, not looking for external validation, then the community itself benefits because you inspire other people to also be that way. Does that make sense?
I love this piece. I love it because it's like authenticity breeds the opportunity for vulnerability. And what I love so much about it is that I think the reason why I decided that this trio would work is because I feel like in our own ways, we are our own authentic selves. And I think that the reason for that is because we've gone through the difficult path of finding our
100%.
One of the biggest barriers to finding our authenticity is recognizing it's not easy to find your authentic self. It's easier to just copy and paste how everybody else is practicing spirituality. It's easier to go, I'll just try and be like that devotee. I'll just try and be like that person. And I think we can have our idols in spiritual life. Like, you know, some of you might, I don't know, idolize the Dalai Lama, or some of you might idolize the Pope. Some of you might idolize Radhanath Swami. Some of you might idolize Kaylee Woods. Like, you know, whoever it is, you have an idol, it's okay. But I think it's still very much necessary to find your authentic self through the non-easy path.
It's also hard to be yourself.
Yeah, you get challenged a lot.
It takes a level of confidence to be true to yourself despite what's popular.
Yeah.
You know, we all, like, I think you just mentioned it as well. Like, we always want to be the pop star or be like that person or this person. And you being yourself may not be the most popular person.
Yeah.
So are you ready to be yourself amongst all of that confrontation as well?
I know for a fact that people find me annoying. I know it.
I wasn't going to say anything.
I know people do. And I have to live with that almost. Yeah. Because the cost is that I end up conforming and talking like everybody else, dressing like everybody else, practicing like everybody else, at the risk of not really finding my relationship with God, and which is why I joined the spiritual practice in the first place.
And I think that's what is happening for Arjuna here, also in the Bhagavad Gita, because he's saying, Krishna's saying, like, at the moment, you've become anxious because you're stepping away from your authenticity.
Yep. Yeah.
Right? You've become mental because you're not performing your duty, which is to be yourself, right? Yeah. We're not all going to be incredible soldiers and warriors, right? We have our own thing, whether you're a potter or an artist or an academic or in finance, right? But our duty in this world is to be our authentic self.
Mm.
And I think that's why Arjuna's in difficulty here, because he's stepping away from that.
Mm.
Have you ever received some advice that's really helped you to become a more sincere person or given you the confidence to be seen as yourself?
I mean, the first thing that springs to mind is when my spiritual teacher, he told me he loves me. And I think that, if I'm honest, up until that point, this sounds like it's emotional, like I'm just grabbing for some love, but I didn't feel very loved. I felt like I wasn't lovable. Because I felt different. I felt that maybe I needed to be like everybody else. But sometimes just the words coming from someone that I deeply admire and love myself, just them telling me, I love you, just as you are. I think that was so empowering. And I think that, yes, like we all are striving to hear those three words come out the mouth of another person, that I think it's also beautiful if we can sincerely say it to someone else. It's so empowering. You know, we don't realize the effect that these three words can have, because ultimately, like, I can't remember, was it Mother Teresa that said this? That the deepest need...
Hunger for the heart.
Yeah, the deepest need for every living entity is to give love and to receive love. And because we're so hungry to receive love all the time, we forget the responsibility to give love.
Yeah.
And those three words, I love you, if just said, even people like, yeah, but you can't say it so casually. I'm like, my guy, just say it once and you'll see the effect of that person feeling uplifted. And that's so beautiful. You feel also empowered. It's a reciprocation of just saying.
Words have such a powerful
effect.
Yeah,
for sure.
Like I found just the smallest words from someone can make the biggest impact in your day.
Yeah.
And the Gita is like the prime example of it. Krishna's not actually doing anything to help Arjun. He's talking to him. And the first thing he tells him after this breakdown in the beginning bit is, you've totally forgotten yourself. Let me tell you who you are, first of all, then we can talk about growth.
Right.
So I think this, as we're talking about authenticity, that's like the precursor to any genuine, honest growth that we're going to have. It's difficult to be yourself. You'll be challenged being yourself.
Yeah.
But it's essential if you're serious about growing, especially spiritually as well.
You know, one thing that came to mind? Yeah. Recently, I was listening to a seminar on exactly this, authenticity. Mm-hmm. And the speaker, what they did is they took one of the preeminent gurus of our lineage, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and they put side by side with him all of his disciples. Now, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he was a renunciate, etc., in saffron clothing. And his disciples were also completely different to how he was. Some of them were business people.
Right.
Some of them were artists. Mm. Some of them were just in the kitchen. Well, I say just in the kitchen. That's honorable as well. In the kitchen, washing pots. Some of them started temples. Some of them were like, you know, there were two German ladies that were his disciples as well.
Mm.
And I think that sometimes we forget that there is such a beauty in the, you know, variegatedness. Like, just in a flower, if you look at a flower, right? Oh, here we go. If you look at a flower, each petal on the flower is a different shape, a different color, a different shade, you know? And that's what makes the thing beautiful.
Mm.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Variety.
Mm. It's interesting that, for instance, I could have said, I love you,
but
it might not have had as profound of an effect as your spiritual master saying that. So what's the reason for that? I think that empowered people have a shakti or an opportunity to empower others.
Yeah.
So the reason it's profound that those three simple words came from your spiritual teacher and that had such an effect on you, I would assume is because he is connected to something higher than himself, which is empowering him. right?
He's a conduit.
Exactly, right. Exactly. So it gives some gravity to the words that it's not just... I really believe, especially in music, that sound vibration and words in general are a perfect vehicle for intention. They're a perfect vehicle for intention because you could say, I love you in so many different ways, right? But there's something about the way he said it that hit something very specific in you. It's like it was a key that unlocked something for you.
Yeah, go on.
I was going to say, that's really interesting. I was going to share a story on that as well. Empowered people who are truly invested in our life, even though physically they may not be there all the time, hold so much weight behind what they say. So I was going for a really tough period in my life at one point, and I wanted to update my spiritual teacher, right? I was like, I was hoping for just 15 minutes with him, just update, just get some words of encouragement. Job's a good one. And he flew to London, and he was meeting loads of different people, very busy. He was just here on a connecting flight. And I never got my chance. I had my time booked in, last minute, switched. And I was like, oh man, I'm going through crisis mode right now. And I need to just, I just need 15 minutes because I really need your guidance because that's what I really, really seek. It didn't happen. I was dropping him back to the airport and the whole airport drive, the whole airport journey, didn't say a word. And I was just like, am I going to get even 5 minutes? Didn't say a word. I got right to the terminal and there was someone else in the car who was shaking the bags out. And then for about 10 seconds, he just said a very few words, which I won't share, but just a very few words of encouragement, of confidence, of understanding. It was like a few words which basically showed, I understand.
Right.
Here is where you need confidence and this is what I expect from you.
Right.
In a very few words. And I was, after that moment, I was satisfied. I was like, done. Good. I'm ready to roll. Let's bring it on. And it's so interesting. Such few words, but done with such a deep and loving intention, absolutely transforms our consciousness going forward.
And this is an interesting angle that when we are giving love, it empowers people to be vulnerable, empowers them to be their authentic selves. There's a theme building here. But this verse goes a bit further. It says that when we are inquiring with that level of humility and vulnerability, that it's important that we don't just output emotion, but also we ask genuinely for guidance. Like Arjuna is saying, here, now I'm your disciple. He's submitted, like, okay, I've got too much crap going on in my life. Don't know what I'm going to do on this battlefield. I feel like I'm weak. I feel like I'm, you know, I've lost my composure due to miserly weakness. Now I'm your disciple, Krishna, and a soul surrendered unto you. Please instruct me. And I think that this is a really important piece. When we are feeling weak and when we're feeling like there's no way out of the situation, yes, of course, find someone that you can invest that emotion, find someone that's going to hear you lovingly. But at the same time, for when we are feeling in that position, we should ask these simple words, guide me, instruct me, help me, you know. Otherwise, I think the danger is that when we are feeling like really imprisoned by these feelings of pain, etc., we can sometimes just see it as an opportunity to output emotion. But real blessings means to get guidance on the next step. That's what blessings mean, actually, according to the Vedic literature. It's not just like you put a hand out and rays come out. Boop. Blessed up. But you're asking for guidance. You have to ask for guidance.
Is that the super yogi move?
It got stranger every time.
I know. You're getting more into it.
More if you want.
You're trying to get the rays out. That's right.
Come on. But asking for guidance.
My difficulty with that is that...
Here we go.
I feel like I would lose my authenticity by following someone else's instruction. And in one sense, I'm being a devil's advocate because I obviously I've taken spiritual guidance and advice, right? But many times I actually remove myself from opportunities to be instructed because I feel like, do you know what I mean? I feel like, okay, if there's some instruction here, that means I'm going to have to follow someone else's path, right? Someone else's idea of what I should be doing for myself.
I guess you've got to find your genuine well wishes.
Or maybe we don't believe that the person who's giving us the instruction deeply understands us enough to give us the instruction that we need. That's also
don't have the full picture, mate.
Or maybe they do, but we don't believe they do.
That is the hard part of being a submissive person in bhakti yoga and in Krishna bhakti. Because, you're right. You feel like you have to submiss who you are. And I guess that what my thought, my reaction to that would be that there's a difference between being submissive to the principle and there's a difference between being submissive to the detail. That there's certain principles that we have to extract from the instruction. Like, for example, if someone instructed you, like, you know, you're going through a really interesting mental phase and someone instructs you, I don't know, maybe you want to take up a bit more non-violence in your life, like be a bit more ahimsa, like maybe you want to take up a vegetarian. You'd be like, well, how does that relate to being a happier person? But there is a relation. And how you do that, then the detail can differ.
Right.
So if the spirit, if a teacher or a guide instructs us, then we have to learn how to extract the essence. Just like how we've given the example before, but a bee extracts the honey. You know, like the bee, what it does, it takes the nectar from the flower and then it like does some magic, like walla walla, and then it creates into the honey. It's not that it's automatically honey.
And I also...
Walla walla. Walla walla.
I've never heard a bee say that in my life.
Listen carefully.
Isn't that a song?
I don't know.
Walla walla bing bong.
Unless you want to give a performance.
Yeah, I was just thinking Krishna, he says, surrender unto me. He doesn't say, surrender your intelligence.
Boom.
You know?
Yep.
So yeah, receiving an instruction and the fruition of that blessing coming true, that takes patience and that takes humility and that takes meditation and contemplation. It's not something that, all right, you got the blessing, it's what you do with it. You know, because someone could give you an instruction, for example, go and share this message of chanting with the world. Essentially the message I got from my spiritual teacher. But how I did that, he never told me.
He never
gave me the step-by-steps. And in the same way, I think most mature spiritual teachers won't line it out as detailed as that. They'll give you the principle.
You've
got to figure out the detail.
You've got a brain, right?
You've got a brain.
You can use it. You've got to
figure it out.
Here's a bit of a flip side to this conversation as well, is in the pursuit of being our authentic selves, people feel that all the negative aspects of them are their authentic selves as well, and therefore I don't need to grow. This is me. This is where I'm at.
Love it or leave it.
Love it or leave it.
Right? And what we're talking about here and where the Gita's talking about is being authentic for spiritual growth's sake. For the sake of spiritual growth, we try to be our authentic selves. Not to be comfortable in where we're at, because none of us are, you know, pure, like, advanced yogis in samadhi. We're at different stages. So it's, where are you in respect to where you want to be? And what is the next step for you look like? Not, I'm being authentic in myself, therefore I can talk in a way in which is offensive to other individuals.
That's
I can
authenticity.
Show bad character because that's me. Well, from spiritual wisdom, we understand that's no one. You know, that's no one.
I love that. Got to find, and I love that you spoke about intensity. Like there's this quote, you've got to find an intensity that matches your personality. So you've got to find principles and an intensity to those principles that match your personality and then practice that with consistency. And that brings out your spirituality. There's so many, I mean, we talk about all those different
intensity,
things.
Consistency equals?
Intensity that matches your personality.
Intensity that matches your personality.
That you practice with consistency.
With consistency.
And that brings out the spirituality.
Wow.
I like that.
Walla walla.
Walla walla.
Bing bong.
With that, we're going to close off this episode of For Soul's Sake. We talked about all things. Finding your authenticity, being vulnerable, receiving guidance. There's a lot that was in there. I really hope that you maybe find the opportunity to jot some of these thoughts down that you're having right now. drop us a comment below. Feel the permission to listen to this conversation again. It's not just a piece of entertainment, but I hope, and I think we're all praying, that this is giving you the opportunity to churn and to reflect and to transform through this conversation. And we're really having a great time doing it. Walla walla. See you on the next episode. Peace out.
Take care.
If you enjoyed this podcast, you'll love my interview with Raghunath Kapo on his fascinating journey from New York punk to monk. Go check it out.
The guy just said, I've got a gun and I'm going to kill everyone tonight. And it was just one of those wake-up calls that you get when you hear like, oh, tonight's the night. I forgot that we all die. It's one of these things, as a monk, you read every day that life is temporary, your body's temporary, people leaving their bodies, etc. But you'd never think it's going to happen to you that day.